You're very welcome along to another episode of It's Not a Sport Podcast. We're getting on to episode number 7 now, running near the end of season 1.
Penultimate episode. That's where all the
magic happens.
Where the big stuff goes down. You know, Game of Thrones fans and stuff will tell you that it's not the finale. It's the penultimate episode where you need to tune in.
Well, Game of Thrones fans will also tell you that the penultimate episode was terrible of the final season of Game of Thrones. So hopefully we're not on that track.
Yeah.
But favorite penultimate episode of any series, even though this has nothing to do with sport.
I can't remember. It kind of blends into my mind a little bit, but Breaking Bad, as it was coming towards the end, those like set up episodes before the finale were unbelievable, and the finale did kind of hit that level as well. But yeah, that such a strong finish to a great show.
I was going to say Prison Break.
Oh yeah.
But every episode of Prison Break, if you watch Prison Break back, every episode is like the penultimate episode because it always ends at a cliffhanger.
Mm.
So it doesn't matter what episode you're watching.
Prison Break come back? Is it back?
It's supposed to come back, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway. That is such a sidetrack. That's probably the most sidetrack of all the sidetracks that we've taken on this podcast so far.
Yeah.
Today, we are talking about skiing, and in particular, slalom skiing. Later on, Cormac Comerford will join us. He's an Irish slalom skier, ranked quite high on the world rankings for an Irish person partaking in winter sports. As we know, we don't get that many snowstorms in Ireland. Skiing wouldn't exactly be our strong point, but have you ever skied? I ask you that every single week, and this week you've actually done what we were discussing.
I have. Just Bavaria, around that area, so one of my friends from home, his girlfriend lives over there, so it's kind of just near that region, and like it would really be the done thing where you just hop on a train and do it at the weekends in the same way we would have went and played football at the weekends. So obviously a lot of skills beyond my realm, but it's such a... The lifestyle is so cool, like literally, but also figuratively in the sense that, like the cabin life, all this kind of stuff, the gear.
Yeah.
No, it's just a cool place to hang out, I think.
Did you take lessons?
Well, just a lesson when, like literally a beginner's lesson, and then you were allowed to do your own thing.
Pizza and chips.
Yeah.
Breaking it.
Yeah. So it was, I didn't take, like, there was like hills, like gradient, where it was like, you see the pros over in the far side, and then like, the baby lessons like me were like on the flat sort of, so it was great.
Have you didn't chance the black slopes?
No, God no. God no.
I did that.
Have you much experience?
I went once when I was in transition year, as you do. It was a school holiday and we went to Austria, but at the time we were obviously 16, all 16, 17 at that time, and Austria's drinking age was 16. So we went over with our school, and our teacher contacted all of our parents. There's only eight of us, my eight closest friends, we all went over, and our teacher, who was going over with us, contacted our parents beforehand, asking us, were we allowed to drink? Because the legal age over there was 16. So we were all over, and it was almost like a booze holiday, as well as being a skiing holiday in transition year. And there was two other schools there, and they were under strict, regimented plans with their teachers. Teachers didn't let them go out of their sights, and meanwhile we were off to Spar to the off license and actually living up that proper boozy skiing holiday vibe. It was brilliant.
Yeah, and like it's obviously a dangerous sport, I would have said, but it's also like quite athletically demanding in a way people probably don't appreciate, and like I would have had issues with my ankles from playing more normal sports growing up, and it does take it out of you, like the angles you have to hit and all that kind of
thing. Yeah, well, that's something we actually talk about with Cormac, because he's training for the professional level of this, and a lot of his training takes place up the mountain. So you learn about athletes who like the likes of runners, boxers doing altitude training. All of his training is altitude training. So he's doing all of his workouts, every bit of his training is done with less oxygen than he's used to. So whenever he's doing training in the gym or normal levels, he actually finds it a little bit easier because obviously he's training, he's using less oxygen.
Yeah.
When he's training normally, so when he has full oxygen, it's actually a lot easier for him. So that's actually quite interesting about it as well. I did do the black slopes once when I was there, and it was not even enjoyable.
Yeah.
Because you're just going the gradient is so high that you're just...
Yeah, I can imagine.
Very scared going down. Slalom skiing, a little bit different.
Yeah.
A little bit of maneuvering in and out of poles. We did a competition at the end of the ski holiday as well.
So slalom skiing, I'm sure you get into it, but is it like point to point?
Yeah, so you start up at the top and then you work your way down through a track and of poles.
It's you win based on times.
Yeah, quickest to the bottom. And then there's another one that's giant slalom skiing. So that's just, as you'd expect, slalom skiing with a higher gradient. And Cormac does that as well. So that he's actually better at that than he would be at the normal slalom skiing, which is quite interesting. So there's different variants to it, but we also talk about the attitude that natural skiing countries would have to the likes of Ireland, because I'm sure you saw it when you were over in Germany that there's kids of like two or three running around and they're better at skiing than you are.
Yeah.
So what chance do Ireland have when it comes to competitions like that? And the mental side of things comes into that as well, because Cormac's competing for the sake of competing. He knows he's never going to win. Mm. He knows he's never going to win an Olympic medal, but what he wants to do is be there and bring Ireland to a respectable level where the next generation and the generation after that might be actually able to compete. So that's actually quite interesting as well.
It's funny you mentioned the younger people participating, because it's something you see in other sports where you might perceive them to be a danger, but it's something if you pick it up later in life, you're more aware, whereas they're just entrenched in it from the get-go and they don't have time, they don't have that fear factor.
Yeah, so they get good before it actually gets dangerous.
Yeah.
So it's less dangerous by the time they're our age.
So yeah,
for them.
Like to your point, like they obviously have the conditions in their favour, but they have that in their favour as well, where it's something they grow up with and, you know, it's not something they're learning on the fly.
Yeah. Before we get into the interview, also to do with skiing, one of the best episodes of Always Sunny in Philadelphia. I know you're a fan.
I was hoping you were going to bring this up. Yeah, no, it's so good.
It's brilliant.
It's such a good episode. Like Charlie, because like we probably don't appreciate it as much as the Americans did, because in the 90s there were like so many of those films, like ski movies, and they were just like taking the piss basically out of that whole idea. But yeah, it's an excellent one.
So the penultimate interview of It's Not a Sport podcast, here's myself talking to Cormac Comerford about slalom skiing. Okay, so I'm delighted to say I'm joined in studio now by Cormac Comerford. Cormac, thanks very much for coming in.
Cheers, thanks for having me in.
You're just back a few months from the World Championship. We were talking off air there, so how did you get on at those?
The World Championships in Ottawa were bloody brilliant. I had a personal best in the slalom of 42nd place, improving from the last ones, from the 2017 World Championships where I came, I think it was 52nd, maybe 49th, I can't remember now. But personal best was huge for me. The conditions were brutal because it was 15, 16 degrees, as I was telling you.
Yeah.
Not really typical for Scandinavia in February, March, but anyway, it felt more like Kerry because it was raining and it was damp and you could feel it in the air. But the snow was falling to bits. The conditions were really brutal. And I came away with a personal best, which was huge, despite the struggle. And in giant slalom, I had a really good performance. I was really happy. I gave it everything. I went full gas. But 10 gates towards the finish, I hit one of the ruts with huge speed and my ski just exploded. So then that was the ski off and me on my belly sliding down the slope. So
when that kind of thing happens at such a big stage, what's the feeling going through your head there?
I was pretty pissed off, to be honest. Pretty annoyed, because it's, you train years and years for this and then you've got one chance, and whatever, you make one wrong move, you take an inch of the line too high or too low and then it's over. So it's really frustrating, but you got to remember that it's part of the sport and you go through these ups and downs, and you can't really avoid these things, but you do your best all the time. So I was actually in the end, I was probably happier with my GS performance.
Yeah.
Because from when I came out of the gate to when I ended up on my stomach, it was really quick, and it was probably some of the best skiing I've had. So that was a really good take back for me, how I could perform under that pressure. And it's just a shame that something like that had to happen.
Yeah, and alpine skiing wouldn't be a massive sport within Ireland, so, and obviously we don't get the snow. You don't get any snow down in Kerry, like you were saying.
No.
So how do you get into this sport? I think I read you got into it when you were about 10.
Yeah, I was about 10 years old, and there was a festival up in the ski club in Kiltearnan in the Dublin Mountains. They have an artificial slope there. It's 200 metres long. There's three slopes there, but the main one's 200 metres long. It's made of plastic, and you can ski there all year. And they had an Oktoberfest up there, just like the Austrians do and the Germans. So we went up to have a look. There was some discount ski lessons on. We went up, and we didn't actually plan on going skiing, but some friends of my mother said, go on, give it a shot. So we found some long sleeves and some long trousers, and we got onto the slope. And then from then, I just got addicted. I became completely obsessed from then on. I was always looking at videos, asking my mum for DVDs, for books, for different things like that, pestering to go on ski holidays. And then it just kind of took off. So we went on a couple of ski holidays, and I would just go mad. I wouldn't stop. I'd go up for lunch, 10 minutes, finished, out the door, back on the slopes. I wouldn't see my parents all day. I'd be going around skiing around with loads of random people, just for the crack. And then we got into racing up in the ski club. They've got a really good racing program up there. So they train on the weekends, and then they do races away in Britain and England on plastic and indoor.
And what was it that attracted you to it? Why did you fall in love with it straight away, do you think?
It's hard to say now, but I think it was just the rush and adrenaline of being able to pick up speeds like that with not so much effort. I mean, I can go 100 plus kilometers an hour easy by just getting into a tuck position and sitting there. And that's an incredible feeling, just to be able to get into a really small position, point your skis down the hill, and end up at 150 kilometers an hour. It's a bit nuts, but that's the rush, and that's really thrilling.
So it was just the adrenaline junkie within you that got you into this?
Yeah, that was it. I've always been into different sports, like surfing, windsurfing, and sailing, and I played rugby, I played everything, but it was all those ridiculous kind of individual sports that really got me to tick.
Yeah, before you actually mentioned GAA and rugby there, all three of those sports that you mentioned were individual. So do you think that's part of it, that you actually enjoy partaking within yourself?
Yeah, I really enjoy the challenge, and I love learning and improving myself. And I guess through those sports, it's easy to achieve those goals. And it's kind of like you have to be your own team, and you have to manage all the different aspects of a team, but within yourself. So I really enjoy that. And I think, but when I was younger, I probably didn't realize that. I was just blindly obsessed, and it just naturally came to me. But now I'm more conscious of it, and that's what I really love about it.
So how do you go about getting into the competitive side of things? Because as we mentioned before, Ireland wouldn't exactly be a stronghold in winter sports at all. So how do you get into races like this? Is it you traveling across Europe and taking part in races across Europe, or is there races within Ireland and indoors?
Yeah, the racing profile in Ireland is kind of small. So in Ireland, there's really only one place to race, and that's in Kiltearnan in the ski club. So they do trainings on the weekends, and they have races every month and end of season races. And they also go away to races in Britain. So they'd race on other plastic slopes and indoor slopes. And I did that when I was younger. But then the next step is snow racing. But there's not a lot of information or education around real ski racing in Ireland, because we don't have snow. We're not part of the kind of Austrian or French way of doing ski racing, because we don't have snow, and there's not a huge amount of knowledge around. So I'm hoping I can push that up. But how I got into it was through racing with some British guys indoor over there in Manchester, and they've got a load of indoor ski halls, Glasgow and stuff like that. I met some people, and they would race in France and Austria and I loved that. And we would always go on ski holidays. I would do a little bit of race training because I was always so obsessed when I went away. I was always trying to do the next best thing. So ski racing was the next step. And I went away with some of these British guys, did a couple of the British series races on snow, and from there took off. So I did a load of British races on snow because the Irish Federation don't organize races at the moment. It's still really developing.
Okay.
It's developing quite well, but it's still like grassroots and building up. So I started through the British system, and then I went internationally when I was about 15, 16. And from there, it's brought me to European Youth Olympics, World Championships, World University Games. I've been an Olympic hopeful 3 times. I've been actually qualified for 3 Olympics, but just not made the cut.
And when you're coming up through the ranks, are you training yourself, or are you getting lessons over across Europe as well?
At the moment, I'm training with an international team. It's based in Italy. So it's a private team with guys just like me from other ski nations, or non-ski nations, really. So there's a guy from Denmark, a girl from Georgia. Actually, there's a girl from Greenland in our team.
Okay.
Which is amazing. So there's loads of different nationalities, some Germans as well. So that's really good. I train with them. We have Italian coaches based in Italy, and then we race around Italy, Austria, Germany, Slovenia, all over Europe, really.
And when you signed for this team, did you notice a big jump in the class in your own racing, and again in kind of just the different technical aspects? Did you see yourself improving dramatically from then on?
Yeah, it was massive. It was really, really big, because previous to that, I joined 3 years ago, and previous to that, I had no coaches. And I was ready to give up, actually, because I was just coming into college. I had very little funding left. My parents couldn't support me anymore, so I was on my own. And I was thinking, holy crap, what am I going to do? So for 2 years, I pulled together all the funds I could. I saved every cent, and I just went away by myself, because I had some tuition and coaching previous to that, so I kind of knew what I should be doing.
Yeah.
A vague idea of what I could do. And I knew what my potential was, so I went away and I was catching trains and buses all over Europe, sleeping in bus stations and all these shoddy places just to go to races. And after those 2 years, I got a little bit of extra support because the results were coming in, and then I managed to join this team, Kronplatz Racing Center, which is in Italy. And then from then on, because I had been improving under my own tuition, just from watching my own videos and watching other videos and trying to improve that way.
So you're almost self-learning.
Yeah, and that was benefited me huge, because I would come back after a summer of watching my videos and comparing it to the best in the world and everyone else, and I'd actually be better on snow without having touched snow in over 6 months or something. I'd get back on snow and I'd be skiing different. So that was huge for me. Having to learn that by myself and push through that was a really steep learning curve, but something that really benefits me now when I'm training with a professional team and I have all of the support around me. It's like coaching on drugs.
So that was obviously, it's a rocky road to get to that point. So it must have been a massive breakthrough for you to when this team eventually comes and sign you. But how did that come about? Did they just spot you at races and approach you, or did you have to approach them for it?
Well, I approached them during that time, those 2 years when I had really little funding, but I just couldn't afford it at the time. They were willing to accept me, but I couldn't pay for it. So I just kept chugging on during those 2 years. And then the scholarship in TU Dublin that I have now was enough to kind of get me going. So I did a little bit of training with them for 1 year, and from then it kicked off and the association started paying a bit more attention, and it's been on the up since then.
And you're actually based in Italy with this team now as well, are you?
Yeah, so I mean, I can't afford to stay out there all year, and I study full-time in TU Dublin, what was DIT, and so I'm usually back and forth. It's usually every 2 weeks. Sometimes I'd be spending up to 6 weeks out there, but I'm back and forth all the time.
And it was an engineering degree as well, so that's no that's not exactly an easy degree. There's 60 plus hours in college. So how do you, and there's also a lot of training goes into slalom skiing and getting yourself in the mental and physical shape to do it. So how did you find the balance between that?
It's bloody hectic, to be honest. First 2 years of college, I was studying like seriously full time and skiing fairly full time. And my body and my brain were just in bits after the season. So came May, I was just collapsing. It's because I have to coordinate all of my labs and all of my study around my training. So back then it would have been like every 2 weeks I'd have to move all my labs, I'd have to contact all the lecturers, talk to all the students and make sure that everything's going to work like clockwork, because if somebody doesn't show up, then it's all screwed and I'm going to lose my marks and then I won't pass.
So between college and training, how many hours are you putting in a week?
Well, geez, it's every hour of the day pretty much. Like when winter comes around, I'm in college studying and in the gym or training or traveling home, one or the other, or making food for the next day. So it's pretty full on. So it's nice in the summer. It's a little bit more relaxed. Train hard and have a little bit more time to recover. But as soon as October, November comes around, it's going to be full gas. I won't have time to breathe.
I want to touch on a little bit of the training that you do for it, because you hear of a lot of runners and different athletes doing altitude training, but you're pretty much doing that the whole time. So how difficult do you find that?
It's tough work, actually. In the summer, we ski on glaciers because that's the only place where there's snow in the summer. So in June and July, we were in France in Les Deux Alpes, and it's about 3,600 meters. And I was just flicking through videos the other day, and I was watching them, and I made a little log. And I was talking to myself saying, we're 3 days in, but I'm bloody tired. And I remember coming to 3,600 meters, doing three sessions a day, skiing, hit in the morning, skiing for 3-4 hours, and then another training session in the afternoon at 3,600 meters. That's 3,600 meters and higher than where I live now. It's a lot of extra work. And at the time, you're probably not thinking about it. You're just thinking, oh, I'm really unfit and I'm super tired. But in hindsight now, the altitude it does make a massive difference. But after that training in the summer, after skiing at 3,600 meters for a couple of months in the summer, coming down and skiing at 1,500 meters is so easy. So that's nice.
Yeah, it obviously pays off doing that extra bit.
And you acclimatize.
So there's obviously a mental side of this as well, because the less oxygen you have, the harder it is to think properly, and you have to do that while traveling at a high speed.
Yeah.
So how big of an aspect is that within your training, or do you pay attention to that at all?
Well, the mental side, well, training up so high it's more hard work physically than it would be mentally, because mentally we've been doing these runs over and over and over again over years and years and years, so it almost works like clockwork. The focus will deteriorate quicker when you're up there, so you can't do as much with as high quality, but you can do less with good quality, and that's okay. But one huge mental aspect is during the racing. Some people could be really, really good ski racers, and in training, they will smoke everyone. But when it comes to the race, they might just disintegrate, and they cannot ski as close to what they do in training. So that's a really big aspect of it, being able to transfer your training to a race or your race to a training. Because some people will ski crap in training, and you'll wonder, like, how are these guys in that world ranking? But when it comes to a race, something clicks, and they'll fire it down and they'll crush everyone. So that's a really interesting, fun part of the ski racing that I enjoy trying to come over.
Yeah. Do you have any traditions that you do before a race to get yourself mentally focused? Do you have ticks that you have to tick off before everything?
People might know me for the guy that's screaming around at the start. Because sometimes the adrenaline goes and I want to get jacked up, so I'll be screaming at the start to get the blood flowing and to get the adrenaline going, and it's a good way to go jumping up and down, stamping my feet. And you can't really do that anywhere else, so that's kind of fun. Yeah. I can't just go into college and start like screaming around the place, getting myself jacked up for an exam or something. That would be a bit inappropriate. So it's cool. It's kind of the one only place where I can do it and get away with it. So it's a good outlet.
Yeah. It's a good how does that go down with the other athletes?
Some might get intimidated, some kind of laugh. Everyone takes it differently. So, I don't know, but it works for me.
If it works for you, that's all
I'm not
matters.
So concerned about everyone else. I have to beat them. So when you focus on myself.
That's obviously at a competitive level. So one side of the thing that I would kind of interested in is the fact that, you know, Ireland, it's not a traditional winter sport country. I think the last medal or the last person that came close to a medal in a Winter Olympics for Ireland was like 2002.
Yeah, skeleton, I think, was
Yeah. So when you're going into these competitions, how does that play a part in your thinking at all? That do you actually feel that going into this you can win a medal, or are you just there to do as get as close to that as you possibly can?
I wouldn't be of medal contentions now. I would go in to do the best as I can. Ski racing in Ireland is really small, mm-hmm. and we have not had many athletes, and we have certainly not have had any athletes of my level or people of a similar level to me. So my goal really is to push ski racing as far as it's ever gone before, and I've done that already. I've got one of the lowest points, like highest world ranking that somebody from this island has ever achieved. And I just want to push the limits of what's been done. Mm-hmm. Because in ski racing, there is, we don't have many guys that have been born and bred on this island and achieved massive feats. To be really good, you have to take advantage of other nations' development programs and go to their races and stuff like that. So for an Irish person to do well, or for an Irish person to be ski racing full stop at my level for this long is a feat. Because usually when Irish ski racers get to about the age of 18 or something, when they get into college, it's usually done, if not before that. So for me to be here and still skiing and have support from the federation, from college and from the Olympic Committee is huge.
Yeah.
And I'm just pushing the limits of what's been done before.
Do you have a particular aim that you think you can get to that would be just an unbelievable feat for any Irishman to achieve? Is there a ceiling for you, do you think? Or are you just trying to push as far as you possibly can?
At the moment, I'm pushing as far as I possibly can. I know I can make it. I could definitely make it Europa Cup and World Cup and compete there. It'll take time, but I'm willing to put in that time and that work. To get a top 30 in the Olympics would be huge. That's massive. I mean, top 30 in the Olympics or top 30 World Championships is massive. I mean, it's a struggle for the big nations of France, Austria, Germany, for a lot of those racers to get into the top 30. So for me, an Irish person, to get in there would be absolutely massive. And I've improved on my results. I was 49th, I think, in 2017, 42nd in 2019. And I haven't stopped improving or gaining those results. I haven't hit a wall yet. I'm sure I will at some point, but that's all part of sport and elite sport.
Yeah, so would Pyongyang 2022 be a realistic aim for you?
Beijing 2022.
Or Beijing, sorry.
Yeah, absolutely, that's what I'm going for now. It's 3 years away, or less than 3 years away at the moment.
What do you have to do to get there?
I have to, well, at the moment, the qualification period isn't open. The qualification period is 2 years before the games. So at the moment, I'm just going to be improving my world ranking, and then come the qualification period of 2 years, I'll be racing in international races to improve my world ranking. And they take the average of your best five results and they stick it in a list, and you have to be top 500 to be A standard. for the past three Olympics, I've been B standard, which is it's kind of like the default. It's the one spot that every nation has. So I've been qualified in the B standard, and now I'll be going for the A standard.
Okay. And do you think that that's a realistic chance for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm less than 600 in the world on the international ranking. And on the Olympic list, there's a couple of less people. So automatically, my rank would be already better on the Olympic list. And I've been improving consistently over, well, forever. Yeah. But this past summer has been really good training.
And you're still quite young as well, so you've...
Yeah, I'm just 22, so yeah. I've got another 78 years left.
When you go to these kind of tournaments, what's the opinion of Ireland when it comes to winter sports? Is there a noticeable opinion towards them, or do people pay attention to Ireland, or do they...
From
other nations. So
other nations.
Would it be like a Jamaica bobsleigh, for example? Would it be everyone's kind of looking down at these, and they're the minnows and the small guys? And
it's gas. Yeah, it's evolving. In the past, it probably would have been really... They would have had a... Not a bad attitude, but they would have kind of dismissed Irish people or other small nations pretty easily. Mm-hmm. But now we're all coming up, all the underdogs are starting to perform much better, and they're crapping in their pants a little bit. I was at a race in Austria in November, and I was fourth after the first run. And then one of the Austrian coaches, he was saying, my teammate's German, so he could understand them. And one of the Austrian coaches was saying, what a crap race is this if an Irish guy is in fourth place. And I was, because I was beating all their guys, all the Austrians. So I just thought that was gas. And it's changing so much. Like, we're at such a higher level than we've ever been. And so they would have usually dismissed us, but now they hold their tongue a little bit before
they kind of have to give you some sort of credit. But I suppose that's the benefit of modern sports, that the techniques and the training and the different development processes can spread throughout the world.
Yeah, there's more equal opportunities, which is great. But I think now, for developing nations and for Irish ski racers or anyone from a developing nation, everyone understands that to be the best, you have to ski with the best where the best are. And that's what I'm doing. And that's what, if you want to be any good, you have to do.
So what's the grassroots level looking like in Ireland right now? How do we develop it even further so that we can eventually compete at a higher level?
Well, that's something I'm hoping to improve. At the moment, there's stuff in the pipeline. The Federation are really growing and gaining a better understanding of what's next. So my goal is to just help to promote a bit of knowledge and education of the sport, what ski racing is in Europe, and how Irish people or developing ski nations can get into this and compete with these top guys, because we're all capable. We all have the same physiology. The only difference is they have snow outside their door and we don't. So it's just about making that connection that it's possible for us. And we don't even need snow outside our door. We don't even need to be skiing as much as everyone else, because I know that, I mean, there's 99 things you can do that you can improve without actually doing the sport.
Yeah.
So like, I watch video, I train in the gym, I can understand the mental side of things through training, through perseverance, through different activities. And like, there's so much you can do without actually doing the sport that once you get onto snow, it can accelerate.
And even though you're quite young now, it almost sounds like you're in the pipeline later on in your career, you're going to be coaching. Is that something you ever consider?
Yeah, absolutely, because it's benefited me so much and it's changed me massively as a person. From when I was 10 years old to now 22, I'm a world of a different person, and I'm not somebody who I expected I would have been. I'm much more confident, I have more self-esteem, and I'm in a really happy place. And that's something I almost didn't believe I'd achieve. So to be able to enable more people to get involved in that sport and maybe realize certain things about themselves they didn't know, or just enjoy being outside or doing a sport or being active or moving, is something I'm really passionate about doing.
Yeah, that sounds great. And you're actually looking for funding as well. If people wanted to fund you or fund your training, how can they get involved in that?
Yeah, well, I have a crowdfunding campaign on Pledge Sports, and you can also contact me through my website if you're interested in getting involved. I'd love to get involved with a couple of companies.
What's the name of the website?
It's CormacCumberford.com.
Perfect. Cormac, thanks very much for coming in.
Cheers, thanks very much.
This ain't the down, it's the upbeat, make it complete. So what's the story? Guaranteed accuracy, enhanced CD. Latest technology, darts at treble 20. Huge non-recoupable advance, majors be vigilant. I excel in both content and deliverance. So let's put on our classics and we'll have a little dance, shall we? No sales pitch, no media hype. No hydro, it's nice and ripe. I speak in communications in bold type. This ain't your archetypal street sound. Scan for ultrasounds, north, south, east, west and all round. And then to the underground.
You say that everything sounds the same. Then you go by them. There's no excuses, my friend. Let's push things forward. You say that everything sounds the same. Then you go by them. There's no excuses, my friend. Let's push things forward.